Welcome to Practical Christian Living.
A pastor ought to be paid. There's obviously two extremes, paid too little and paid too much. And a pastor ought to be paid enough to where he can be generous, he can pick up the check, he can be one who gives. He can give to things he cares about. He doesn't have to live in a really constraint, but also it could be too much that it's not good for him as well or not good for the people as well. So there's a balance between those two.
We're in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, where Paul is talking about our freedoms and our rights. Our rights as believers and also the rights of a pastor or leader. How much should a pastor get paid, and why is a pastor's pay important when it comes to his integrity and the integrity of his church? With more on our freedoms and rights out of 1 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9, here's Robert Furrow, pastor of Calvary, Tucson.
But beware, verse 9, he says, we know that whether you eat or don't eat, you're not the worse either way. But beware lest this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to those who are weak. For if anyone sees you who have the knowledge of eating in an idol's temple, will not the conscience of him who is weak be emboldened to eat those things offered to idols? See, he's got a consciousness that there is an idol that exists. He sees you eating it, he's emboldened to eat it, and he gets back into worshiping those false idols. And because of your knowledge, because you guys have knowledge and you know that it's okay, shall the weaker brother perish. See, he loses his salvation, he leaves. And I mean, there's a lot of people who argue over whether or not you can lose your salvation. But here, the weaker brother perishes because you weren't careful when you were walking and living your life in front of him. He says, whom Christ died for. Christ died for this guy. But when you thus sin against the brethren, you wound the weak conscience and wound their weak conscience. You sin against Christ. It might not be sin for you to go out and eat that thing that's sacrificed to an idol, but if you wound their conscience and they fall away, then you have sinned. That is sin. Therefore, and this is Paul's statement, therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never again eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble. He says, if it makes my brother stumble, then I won't do it. If I know that you have a conviction against listening to Cat Stevens, secular music, and I'm like, let's get all nostalgic. Let's listen to some Cat Stevens when you get in the car. Instead of saying, you know what, let's turn on a Christian radio station. Let's put in Jeremy Camp, whatever it might be. So Paul says, if I'm going to make somebody stumble, he says, I'll give up my freedom and I will never eat meat again. I don't know that a lot of Christians live by that standard. I don't know that a lot of Christians think or care about the people, the brother, the weaker brother that's around them. And so Paul, first of all, says in this chapter, what are you willing to give up for your weaker brother? Now, Paul probably goes on to answer a second question in chapter 9. And the second question would be, should you pay your pastor? Should the pastor of a church be paid? The question may have been something like this. Paul, we know that when you were here in Corinth for a couple of years, you never took a paycheck. Now, we've got this pastor here now, and he's been taking a paycheck. Should we pay him or not? Paul, first of all, defends his apostleship in the beginning of this, and he uses an example to talk now about what he's willing to give up for the lost. Listen to what he says. Verse 1, am I not an apostle? The answer to that, by the way, is yes, Paul. You don't even have to defend yourself. It's kind of a shame that to the Corinthians, he's kind of like Rodney Dangerfield. They are not giving him any respect. That he has to say to them, am I not an apostle? And he's going to go on to say, should I even have to defend myself in front of you, the Corinthians? He says, for am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are you not my work in the Lord? If I am not an apostle to others, yet doubtless I am to you, for you are my seal and my apostleship in the Lord. So if the question had been, you know, we're really wondering, Paul, you weren't one of the original, 12 disciples. You weren't one of the original 11 of 12 apostles. We're wondering, are you really an apostle? Or are you an apostle? And so Paul answers by saying, I am an apostle. And if I'm an apostle to nobody else, I am to you, because I was there. I planted the church. I'm the one who's done the work with you guys. Then he says, my defense to those who examine me is this. So now he's talking about questions, direct answer directly to him. Do we have the right to eat and drink? Do we have the right to take along a believing wife, as do also the other apostles or brothers of the Lord? That would be James and Jude, or Cephas. That would be Peter. Or is it only Barnabas and I that have no right to refrain from working? So Paul's going to answer their question now as to whether or not a pastor ought to be paid. He says, is it only Barnabas and I who have the right to refrain from working? He has made a decision to give up his right for pay for a reason. He's going to explain what that reason is, but first he covers the idea that a pastor should be paid. He says, whoever goes to war at his own expense. He's going to give just several quick statements. All of them affirm the idea that someone who's doing the work should get paid for their work. He says, whoever goes to war at his own expense, who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its fruit, and who tends the flock and does not drink the milk from the flock. Do I say these things as mere men, or does not the law say also, for it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle the ox while it treads the grain. Is it oxen God is concerned about? Or does he say this altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt. Now, Paul just said that God didn't care about the oxen, which kind of cracks me up. But he says he's not the oxen he wasn't worried about eating when it was. He says he's saying this for our sake. This is written that he who plows should plow in hope, and he who threshes in hope should be a partaker of his hope. If we have sown spiritual things to you, is it a great thing to reap your material things? Now, Paul is saying, yes, a pastor should be paid. When I'm talking to a young pastor, and inevitably when you're going out and you're planning a church, you begin to think, you know what? We got a handful of people that are coming now. We got enough money to either pay me or to go get a church building. So I think I'm going to keep working and we're going to get a church building. And that's the way that a pastor will generally think because he's a pastor. He wants a building. He wants it to grow. He wants a place for people to be ministered to. But here's the thing. You can have a church without a building, but you can't have a church without a pastor. And once you got a building to pay for, that sometimes turns into something else. It turns into, we got to have the children's ministry. It turns into, and next thing you know, the guy's still working. And what generally happens is he gets burnt out, or he doesn't do a good job, and the church doesn't grow because he's not. I tell guys when they're saying, what should I do? What should be the first thing that I do? Should I hire an assistant pastor? Should we get a building? My answer is always, make sure you're getting paid. It doesn't mean you have to be paid full time. Maybe you still work part time, but make sure that you're getting paid. It does a couple of things for you. It frees you up to be able to do the work of the gospel, which is really important. It also frees you up to be generous. There are boards who take the vow of poverty for their pastors. They're like, well, I don't think you should make very much money. And what happens is the pastor goes out to lunch and he's like, I can't pick up the check. Or he's panicking. Well, thanks for having lunch. Oh, you're going to get it? Thank you very much. A pastor ought to be paid. There's obviously two extremes, paid too little and paid too much. And a pastor ought to be paid enough to where he can be generous. He can pick up the check. He can be one who gives. He can give. He can give to things he cares about. He doesn't have to live in a really constraint, but also it could be too much that it's not good for him as well or not good for the people as well. So there's a balance between those two. But Paul's answer there to their question is absolutely you should pay this guy. They've probably said again, because Paul never took a paycheck from the Corinthians, you didn't take a paycheck, why should we give him one? And Paul says, absolutely, pay him. But then he says, if others are partakers of this right over you, are we not even more? If others should be paid for what they've done, then we should have been paid as well. He says, nevertheless, we have not used this right. Paul was willing to give up his right to be paid for something that meant more to Paul. Paul made tents the entire time that he would go and plant churches. What he didn't want was to go into a community, bring Christ there, and then say, all right, guys, pony up. Let's take an offering. When we first came to town in 1985, you remember there was a lot of television programs, Christian TV, that were asking for money all of the time. They'd cry on TV, if you don't give to us, we're going to close the doors. And I would say, don't tease me. you're going to say you're going to close the doors, then close the doors. Don't tell me you're going to do it and then not do it. The makeup would be running down their face. And that was the men. You should have seen the gals that were crying on TV. I don't know what we're going to do. And of course, some of them ended up going to jail for fraud. There were all kinds of things that happened. There was also a lot of manipulation going around in churches raising money in those days. It's not so much of a problem today as it was then. Churches pass an offering plate, and there's nothing wrong with passing an offering plate. There's nothing wrong with saying, here's what we want to do. We're collecting an offering to see if we can get that done. Nothing wrong with that. That's all good. But back in the 80s, there was kind of this sense that the church was all about asking for money because of what was on TV, and you couldn't go to a Christian concert without them passing some kind of a plate. You couldn't go to a Christian event without them even trying to manipulate. I was at events where they were like, God told me someone's going to give $500. Any of you guys remember those events? God told me there's five people here who are going to give $5,000. God told me, and they'd go around until people raised their hands. God told me there's two people here, they're going to give $10,000. I always thought when they got to like $20,000, I should raise my hand. And then I'd be like, I'm sorry, I don't have any money. I felt like if God give it to me, I'll give it to you. So I'm just, you know, I'll just wait. They had to get really excited. Yes, we got that money. So when we came to Tucson, we didn't pass an offering. We put out our agape boxes. And I remember one pastor from here in town talking to me and saying, you're never going to reach your potential if you don't pass an offering plate. Well, we may never reach our financial potential, but God doesn't need money to do anything. And there's a potential that is beyond that. And we passed the offering plates one time. It wasn't plates, it was bags. We had little bags made, and we went to Centennial Hall for Easter. I don't know how long ago this was, 20 years, maybe longer before that. And we decided, let's just take an offering at Easter, because Easter is always low. The offerings on Easter weekend are always low. It's the big event. There's more people there than ever, but everybody's in a hurry and running around to get out, and it's always low. So we thought, let's pass a bag, and then it will all be good. Except when I felt horrible when we were passing the bag. And because we didn't do it, people felt awkward. You guys are like, what's this? Calvary Chapel Tucson's passing an offering bag. And I remember while it was being passed around the room and the song was playing, I was like, never again. Never again. There's nothing wrong with passing an offering plate. I'd even said before, I don't think it'll happen, but I've even said before, we might start passing an offering plate, because just trying to say there's nothing wrong, because people will go to a church that passes an offering plate. They're like, we went to this church, they passed an offering plate. Most churches do. Most churches pass an offering plate, and there's nothing wrong with it. But we did it. We gave that up because we felt like it gave us a better place in the town. People would come and they would go. They didn't pass an offering plate. They'd leave and go, they didn't even talk about money. They didn't talk about money. And so we felt that gave us an advantage in bringing the gospel to them. And that's exactly what Paul's going to go on to say. Paul says, nevertheless, we have not used this right, but endure all things, lest we hinder the gospel of Christ. For Paul, the most important thing was the gospel. Do you not know that those who minister holy things eat the things of the temple, and those who serve at the altar partake of the offerings of the altar? Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live from the gospel. So again, Paul comes back to the topic again, saying, I didn't do it when I was there with you because I had a greater care for the gospel, but pay the guys that are there. Verse 15, but I have used none of these things, nor have I written these things, that it should be done so to me, for it would be better for me to die than that anyone should make my boasting void. Now, realize this is written in the Greek, and we might have a little bit of a hard time understanding what Paul's saying, but Paul is saying, in essence, I take pride in being able to sacrifice for the sake of the gospel, and I don't want anybody to take that from me. He says, for if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is upon me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. Paul is saying, I'm not doing it because anybody told me. I'm not doing it because anybody's made me do it. I have the right that I could take money from you guys for the work that I'm doing there, but I chose to do it because I wanted, I had a goal in mind. The goal that I had in mind was people coming to Christ. Paul says, hey, are you willing to sacrifice and even give up for the sake of those who would come to Christ? And you'll notice he talks about win to Christ. He says, I have a reward if I do this willingly, but if against my will, I have been entrusted with a stewardship. What is my reward then? In other words, if I'm just doing it to be paid, then what is my reward? But Paul says, I want a reward in that people would get saved, that when I preach the gospel, I can present the gospel of Christ without charge, that I might not abuse my authority in the gospel. He just wanted to stay completely clear of it. For him, he was fine doing work and making a tent. The gifting he had, the education he had, what Paul already knew, he could minister, he could pastor, he could teach, he could be an apostle, he could be sent out and bring the gospel and work as a tent maker. And so Paul says, I chose to do it, not because anybody made me, but because I wanted to, because I wanted to bring the gospel to people for free. Verse 19, for though I am free of all men, I have made myself a servant to all. Paul says, you think you're free? You talk about your freedom? Today there are people that talk about their freedom. I have freedom, and that's all they care about. They don't care how that freedom might affect someone else. I have freedom. Paul says, I'm free, but I've made myself a slave to all men. I consider everybody. I'll restrict myself from what I'm free to do for the sake of everybody, that I might win more. Why? Because I want to see more people come to Christ. And to the Jew, I became a Jew, that I might win Jews to those who are under the law as under the law. Now, very important point here, because I think that what Paul does when he goes to Jerusalem, near the end of Paul's life, he's compelled to go to Jerusalem. They try to stop him. Prophets prophesy to him, you're going to go to Jerusalem and you're going to be arrested. Paul is compelled to go. When he gets there, he takes a vow and he shaves his head. This is confusing, because when Paul is in Galatia, Paul eats with the Gentiles. He eats the Gentile food. He eats at the Gentile table. Someone who is Jewish and living under the law won't do that. So Paul is not living under the law in Galatia. In fact, Peter eats with them. Peter does the same thing Paul does. But when brethren from James, that's the church in Jerusalem, come to Galatia, Paul says Peter withdrew and ate with the Jews, wouldn't eat with the Gentiles anymore. And so Paul calls him a so-called pillar. It's great because Paul gets really uppity in the book of Galatians. Paul says this so-called pillar of the church, he's calling Peter a so-called pillar of the church. I think Peter is a pillar of the church, Paul. This so-called pillar did this, and I withstood him to his face, Paul said. You see this little bitty, short, bald, bow-legged, watery-eyed guy walking up to big old Peter and telling him, you know, you withdrew yourself. You made these Gentiles feel bad because you're not eating with them anymore, all for the sake of these people that come here. But Paul says, to the Jew, I become Jewish. So when he goes over to a Jew's house to have dinner, he doesn't pull out a cheeseburger. Which is not kosher, by the way, because you have meat and cheese together. He doesn't say, do you guys got any ham? I've been really digging ham lately. He goes in as a Jewish man. He is a Jewish man. He goes in as a Jewish man because he wants to win those who are Jewish. He's not going to offend their Jewishness. To a Jew, he becomes a Jew, that he might win the Jew. This gives us a little bit of idea of what was on his mind, even in the previous chapter. He says, that I might win those that are under the law. Then verse 21, to those who are without, as without the law, not being without the law towards God, but under the law towards Christ, that I might win those that are without the law. So when I go to the Galatians, when I go to you guys, the Corinthians, I'm outside of the law. I'm not following the law because I want to win those of you that are outside of the law. So culturally, he'll sit down and have a meal with the Corinthians, who are the Corinthian Gentiles. There was a Jewish community there, but remember, Paul had left the Jewish community and turned to the Gentile community. And so he says, to the weak, I become as weak. If they're weak and their conscience is struck because the food's been sacrificed to an idol, then I become weak. Then my conscience is struck and sacrificed to the idol. To the weak, I become weak. I have become all things to all men that I might by all means save some. He goes, I don't think I'm going to save all men, but I'll become all things to all men. I'll consider everybody because I want to save some. Now this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might partake of it with you. And now uses an analogy. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. They were a very sports-minded group of people. There were the Olympiad Games, often taking place in Athens, which is just down the coast of Greece. In Corinth, they had the Isthmian Games. Try to say that one, by the way. An isthmus is a small piece of land, particularly the Corinthian isthmus, is a small piece of land between the Ionian Sea and the Aegean Sea. They would bring boats up and bring them over the isthmus. Now there's a canal in there. You can go look at it on the map on your phone, which I did when I was beginning to teach 1 Corinthians, and you can see the actual canal where you can go up and you can take that shortcut. You can just go right by through that canal and you leave the Aegean Sea, you go into the Ionian Sea. They had the isthmus that they would bring the boats up on trailers and drag them across to the other side. They had the Isthmian Games there. And so Paul brings up the idea of an athlete. Some of you guys like to do things. Have you guys heard of the mudder race that there is? So you got a 10-mile mudder, you got a 5-mile mudder. So, and you prepare for that. So my son and my daughter-in-law, they ran in this. And it was really funny because they thought I couldn't do it. They think I'm so old. They must think I'm ancient. They're like, I don't know if you could do the mudder. I'm like, all right, whatever you think. I'd whip both of them in the mudder, by the way, if I were to do the mudder. I'd whip both of their times put together in the mudder is what I think. Nevertheless, if you decide you're going to do something like that, you start training, right? Because it's pretty brutal. If some of you guys have ever ran a marathon or a half a marathon, then you do what? You start eating better. You start running a lot. You're not running out of a law. No one's making you do it. You're starting to run because you realize I'm going to have to run, what is it, 26.2? Am I right? Some of you are going to have to run 26.2 miles. And so you start to run now because you want to do that. You have a goal. And your goal is probably not even to win. Because in a real marathon, a Boston Marathon kind of thing, it's going to be a Kenyan that's going to win. Your goal is just to finish, right? Your goal is to finish the race in one piece. Even if you have to crawl across the finish line, your goal is to finish. But you start to run and you start to prepare. You start to watch what you eat and you change those things because you want to finish it. And so Paul is saying, if for the sake of winning football games, guys will go and put themselves through, you know, two-a-days in order to win, if in order to win in basketball, they'll get in this incredible shape that they can run up and down on the court in order to win a basketball game, how much more should we do to obtain the goal of people coming to Christ? That's the analogy. You're not constrained. It's because of your goal. The goal is that your family, your friends, your coworkers, your acquaintances, that some of them would be saved. That's the goal. And if it means that you have to give up something for the sake of that, then we ought to give it up voluntarily. Not because you're made to give it up, but because you've got the goal that people would win. Whatever it might be, if there's anything. And Paul says, I had the right to be paid, but I didn't want to charge anybody for the gospel. So I chose not to do that. And I did it on purpose. Like a guy who's running the race, he's running to win. I'm running that I can obtain the prize of people getting saved. He says, and everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Meaning, you put restrictions on yourself when you compete for the prize. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore, I run thus, not with uncertainty. I fight not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body, bringing it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I should become disqualified. Now, Paul's kind of stretching out a little bit here to something he's going to talk about in the future when he talks about disciplining himself, but he uses it in this analogy of what's your goal? What do you want? This passage is very much like Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, which says, let us lay aside every weight and every sin which so easily ensnares us and run the race that God has set before us with endurance. That's what Paul is saying in chapters 8 and 9. He's saying, lay aside the weights, lay aside the things that hinder, lay aside the things that slow you down. You're giving them up freely because you have a goal and God will honor you for that. And I believe that's the case. I believe that when you live with other people in mind, God will honor you and people around you will come to Christ because of that.
We hope you've been blessed, encouraged, and edified by what you've heard here on Practical Christian Living, a ministry of Calvary Chapel here in Tucson, Arizona. If you'd like to hear more of Robert Furrow's teachings, visit calvarytucson.com, where you'll find recordings of weekly services at Calvary Tucson, and also archives of Practical Christian Living programs. If you live in the Tucson area or you're ever visiting our community, we'd love for you to stop by one of our two campuses in East and Southwest Tucson. You can find service times online at calvarytucson.com. We'd love to have you visit for Bible study. Drop into our Solid Ground coffee shop and bookstore, or take a minute to look through our Mission Thrift Store located at our West Campus, which benefits our various missions projects. Have you accepted Jesus into your life or have questions about salvation? email us at saved@calvarytucson.com. That's S-A-V-E-D at calvarytucson.com. And don't forget to follow us on social media, Instagram at Calvary Tucson or Facebook at Calvary Chapel Tucson. And we want to remind our local listeners that you can watch Practical Christian Living Sunday mornings at 8:30 on KGUN 9. May you walk in the grace and peace of Jesus today.